Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
There is an HBO documentary called Telemarketers. It's three parts, and it tells the story of telemarketers and who are those people that are calling you. And it's fascinating, and it has a Chicago twist at the end. Before the show, I had a chance to visit with Sam Lipman Stern, who is the producer, director, and is in much of this documentary. And he told us how long this project has been in the works.
Telemarketers has been a 20-year project now. I started working at Civic Development Group as a telemarketer when I was 14 years old, and I had just dropped out of the ninth grade, and my parents told me that I had to get a job. I tried applying at Burger King and McDonald's. They both told me I was too young, and a buddy of mine told me about Civic Development Group, this call center that would hire anybody. The managers had me read a script, and they hired me right on the spot. I was 14.
So you get a job after having auditioned, reading the script, to do what? What does the script say? What are you marketing?
The job was to raise money on behalf of police organizations and charities. Mostly police organizations and charities, but also we would call on behalf of, like, veterans charities, firefighters, cancer organizations and charities, and, like, children's charities, like cancer, you know, sick children. But it was mainly built around the idea of raising money for police organizations like the Fraternal Order of Police. Mm-hmm. They trained me at 14 to try to sound like a cop. Like, what does a police officer in, you know, a 1950s Looney Tune cartoon sound like? You know, or the caricature of a police officer, like, Hi, Sam Lipman Stern calling on behalf of the New Jersey Fraternal Order of Police. Good afternoon. That was basically the job. Sound like a cop and get donations for police organizations.
Were you raising money for police organizations?
Well, all right, it's a little bit complicated. We were raising money for various state lodges of the Fraternal Order of Police, and that's the biggest police organization in the country. So we were calling on behalf of different, you know, Fraternal Order of Police organizations or lodges, and saying that the money was going to go to families of fallen or injured officers. That was basically the script. And for the donation, when you made a donation, we would give a sticker, and that was part of the script as well. So you make a donation, usually it was $55 for the gold and $35 for the silver, and we send you out a new sticker to put on the back of your car, and we don't say it's going to get you out of a ticket, but we imply it in a kind of vague way that it may get you out of a ticket.
How much of that $55 went to fallen officers or injured officers?
So that's a good question. So what we found out was that, you know, when I first started working there, I just thought this was how police raised their money. I didn't ask too many questions. But as we after years of working there, I started realizing that there were scam elements. On average, the company CDG, or Civic Development Group, they would raise, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for these police groups. And usually the company CDG would keep 90% and the police would get 10%. Now, after the police got their 10%, you know, we found reports through this documentary that said very little, if any, actually went to help families of fallen officers. Sometimes it would just be dumped into a general fund, and that general fund could be used for fishing trips for some of the heads of these police organizations. Or we heard there was one story of a president using it to buy cruises through the Bahamas. So how much went to the families of fallen or injured officers? Very little, if any.
So when we watch the series evolve, we're watching the actual video of the telemarketers. You often wonder what it's like on the other side of that phone line. Am I talking to a 14-year-old kid or a 40-year-old alcoholic and drug addict or somebody who's out on parole and he had to have work and otherwise he'd have to go back to jail? Who are these people? And it was everybody that I just described. But the remarkable thing is that you guys were videotaping it. Whose decision was it to make and even put on YouTube these videos? How did that happen?
So there were some kids my age, you know, 14, 15-year-old kids. There was a few college students. But mainly, there was a lot of ex-convicts and folks that couldn't get employment, oftentimes because, you know, they were right out of prison or had a felony on their record. So you just had all kinds of different interesting characters. I mean, there, you know, you'd have a murderer on your right and a, you know, drug kingpin on your left. And, there, you know, as you see in the documentary, there was, you know, drugs being sold and done in the office, prostitution, fights would break out. It was total chaos. As long as you hit your numbers, which was usually about $200 an hour that they wanted in donations, it was the Wild West in there. You could do anything. I kind of grew up in that office. Everyone was kind of at the bottom of society. And because of that, it almost created this dysfunctional family. You know, no one at the bottom of society really judges each other. We're all kind of looked out for each other. When I was about 16, a manager named Big Ed, we would talk between calls and just tell our stories and kind of, you know, joke around. And one day Big Ed said, "Hey, Sam, look, you're a teenager. You don't want to be a telemarketer for the rest of your life. You don't want to be a loser like the rest of us. What are your dreams? Like, what do you want to do with yourself?" You know? And I told him I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker and that I wanted to film at CDG. I thought it would be great. And Big Ed told me he was interested in film as well. And he encouraged me to bring in my camcorder the next day. So the next day I brought in my camcorder and Big Ed and I started filming the office shenanigans and putting them up on YouTube.
And so that was played as a lark, though, or at least it felt like that. Ah, what the hell? You know, so what? We're making calls, and it's kind of remarkable that Ed or anybody would think that I'm watching people drink or do drugs or say off-color remarks. But that doesn't reflect well on the company. Nobody seemed to care. It was all just hijinks. But at some point, I mean, the reason it's a documentary is because it's rather exposing what I'll describe as a fraud. If I've given to the state police fund or a police union fund, I might still be. I asked my wife the other day, are we still doing that? Because I believe this guy from New Jersey, or in this case, it would have been Cook County. Hey, we're just trying to help out the guys. And so I said, oh, yeah, you know, I appreciate you working in your off hours here to raise money for the cops. And so I think I know I have been giving money if I'm not still. But if I knew that only 10 cents on every dollar I give was going to go to the officers, if at all, I wouldn't have done it. To me, that's a fraud. When does the documentary series, three parts, turn into that? Or when did you all decide to do something a little more investigative?
Pat Pespis, who's like the star of the series, he came to the forefront of the whole thing. I mean, he was this really charismatic, lovable guy. Everyone in the office knew him. You know, he was addicted to heroin at the time, but he was just a really good guy. You know, he's really empathetic. He was the type of guy that, you know, if your car broke down in front of CDG, and I remember this actually happened one time, he would stay after work to just wait for the tow truck. You know, he just had a very pure heart. We started making a documentary about Pat. We decided, let's make a documentary about a day in the life of a CDG caller. Then Pat was the one who is like, hey, Sam, let's not make a story about some crazy character like me in the office. Let's investigate what we're doing and expose this scam to the world, because there's some shady stuff going on here at the office. And when I was working there, and a veterans charity we were calling on behalf of got shut down because it was a total scam. I mean, after they got their 10%, it all went into the, you know, that all the money was spent, you know, given to the CEO of the charity. It was 100% a scam. And that was the first time that I really started thinking, oh, wow, we're involved in something that's, you know, crazier than just raising money for police and charities. Because before I thought, I knew it was 10%, but I didn't, I just thought, all right, well, this is how police and these charities raise their money. I didn't realize there was a whole other level and layer, and it got a lot deeper and darker than just the 10%, 90% split.
To the degree that it was that 10%, were the unions, say, aware of that, or the organizations upon whom you were calling? Didn't at one point in the documentary you say that, in fact, they felt 10% was better than 0%? At least you were raising something for them. I don't know that they were part and parcel of the scam, but they were the beneficiaries of a scam, and they didn't seem to push back that much. Is that a fair characterization?
When we would question our managers about the 10% going to the organizations, they would always say 10% of something is better than 100% of nothing, right? That was their concept. And the police organizations and charities, all they had to do was loan out their name to the telemarketing company. Telemarketing company did all the work, and they'd get, you know, they'd give that 10% to the police. But it got more sinister. If you ask a telemarketer that's raising money for the police, if you ask them, what percentage of my donation goes to the police? Back when I was calling, by law, we would have to tell them, well, a very generous 10% of your donation. So actually, and then people would hang up.
The whole time, I'm wondering if this will come to Chicago. And there are times where in news clips about various investigations into CDG, we do see Chicago reporters talking about it as a national or local story. But you end with a Chicago police officer's story, don't you?
Mike Byrne, yes.
What was his case and why did you end there?
So Mike Byrne was a very interesting case. He was a police officer, Chicago police officer, who was a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. He was trying to stop a potential mass shooting in Chicago. And he was shot and injured in the line of duty. He had a very serious injury. He was shot. He was called a hero by the mayor. They gave him a great plaque. The Fraternal Order of Police called him a hero, gave him a plaque. And then that was basically where it ended. He didn't get any help at all from the police, from his police union. There was a telemarketing company at the time that was raising money from citizens around Chicago, you know, saying, hey, did you see the on the news about Officer Mike Byrne? He was injured in the line of duty. Well, we're doing a fund drive to collect donations for families of fallen officers like Mike Byrne. He didn't receive a dime. The telemarketing company raised, you know, millions, so they gave their, you know, whatever it was, 10 or whatever percent to the Fraternal Order of Police, and then it didn't, Mike Byrne didn't receive any support, and he's in the hospital. He had a really serious injury. So he decided to sue. He decided to make a lawsuit against the Fraternal Order of Police and the telemarketing company on behalf of 400 other injured Chicago officers. When we found that story, we thought, wow, we really need to interview this guy. And in my opinion, he was really done dirty, you know, by his union and really by, you know, by the government. And that case lasted 20 years. It just got settled in 2019. We showcase his story in the documentary. It was a really incredible and powerful story.
Is he satisfied with the results of that?
He's not. He's not satisfied with the results, actually, because what happened was, you know, he thought that the Fraternal Order of Police should be held accountable and that this should never, he didn't even care about himself. He said this should never happen to another police officer where, you know, these telemarketing companies are working with the Fraternal Order of Police to raise millions of dollars, saying it's going to help injured officers. There's then not a dime goes to the injured officers. So he did it to try to stop it. He's not satisfied because they pushed that case for 20 years. And he said they were hoping that he would pass away. He's in his 80s now.
Did he get any money?
He did not. So he ended up, he didn't, unfortunately. I mean, the judge decided that it wasn't the Fraternal Order of Police's fault. And so they dismissed the case against the FOP. Mike Byrne won against the telemarketing company, but only after 20 years of being in court. And at that point, the telemarketing company was defunct and out of business. So he didn't. Although he won against the telemarketing company, he did not receive any money.
Sam, give me a short answer to this, then I'll let you go. What's your advice to people if they do get a call on behalf of a charity?
I would say hang up. Just hang up. I mean, there's great charities in the United States. Do your research. If you get a phone call, hang up. Charities should not be calling on the phone. You know, do your research. Make sure that they're getting what they, you know, they're getting at least, it's supposed to be 70% at least is going to the charity. 30% goes to fundraising. But you get a call, hang up, hang up, hang up.
Kind of interesting, huh? Very interesting. Sam Lipman Stern, the producer and director, you see him in that Telemarketers docuseries, three parts on HBO, and the final scene is with the Chicago police officer who didn't get any money. You wonder, isn't that the way it always works out on those things? So I watched it the other day and was just intrigued by the fact that it's so behind the scenes. As a lark, they're just videotaping this scam, posting videos to the internet, and and I don't know what they thought would happen as a result. And as a matter of fact, not that much. Hey, John Williams, 773, has texted in. This is Cindy from Hoffman Estates. And this guy on the radio right now sounds like somebody that just called me on Monday trying to raise money for a fallen police officer. And when I declined, he was so rude. I don't believe a word this guy is saying. No, Cindy, this is the guy who was that guy. And now he's telling you the truth. Believe that. By the way, there was a few glitches in that phone line. He was speaking to us from Europe, and actually, I thought that was pretty good. I have trouble getting calls from Hoffman Estates. That was from Europe.